Welcome back to the Policy Viz podcast. I'm your host, John Schwabish. Everyone, this is the final episode of the podcast for the season. That's right, I'm wrapping up the sixth season right now so I can get onto vacation and enjoy some quiet time. Going to do some writing, going to do some reading, maybe even make some data visualizations. We'll have to see. So to help me close up this season of the show, I invited Ben Jones over to chat with me about his new project on data literacy. Ben Jones, as you might know, worked for Tableau for a very long time, and now he recently left the company and started his own venture to help people understand data visualization, understand data, understand analytics, even a little bit more. And obviously, data literacy is something that's near and dear to my heart, as I spend a lot of time in my workshops helping people understand how to read lots of different data visualizations that are probably familiar to you and me, but maybe not to everyone. And so part of the goal, I think, of becoming better at visualizing and communicating data is to understand some of these other and new graphs that people can use. So Ben and I talk about his experience at Tableau, his new project, and lots of other things that are going on over there on the West Coast. So I hope you'll enjoy this week's episode. So here is the final episode of this season of the Policy Viz podcast, my interview with Ben Jones. Hey, Ben. How are you, man?
John, doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How's the West Coast treating you?
It is great. We got some early sunny weather out here.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Really? Is this like the 1 week that Seattle doesn't rain?
You know, May has been gorgeous. I'm supposed to tell everybody, my neighbors remind me that, yeah, it's constantly rainy, so you don't want to ever come out here and move out here. Certainly not move out here.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
We've had some good.
It's always terrible.
We've had some gorgeous days, I got to say. I'll take it, you know. But yeah.
Yeah.
No, doing well out here, man. I'm enjoying it. I love the West Coast. I've been out here for so long now.
Yeah. Well, so tell me. So I know you do a ton of hiking. So where have you been and camping? Where have you been lately?
Yeah, so it's sort of just getting started. A lot of the mountains are still frozen and whatnot.
Yeah.
But just this past weekend, went out to this really actually an amazing hike. It's about maybe an hour sort of northeast of downtown Seattle. It's called Bridal Veil Falls and Lake Serene. And what I love about it is sort of has three things, usually one or two of which you hope to have on a hike, which is an amazing waterfall, a great mountain view, and then an alpine lake. And it has all three. So great about it. But because of that, that means Memorial Day is just, it's basically like Disneyland with the lions and everything. So it was a busy day out there on Monday for sure. But we enjoyed it anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great.
Man, I'm actually doing this Wonderland Trail, which is going to be wild. I'm actually doing 10 days off the grid all the way around Rainier starting at the end of August. Yeah, going through over Labor Day. So it's a pretty cool, you know, 93-miler. And you're out there for a while, you know?
Yeah.
So hopefully I come back and civilization's still going. I don't know. I'll find out.
So is that the sort of thing you feel like you need to train for? Or you just sort of go out there and you're already good to go?
Yeah, that one, it's got about 22,000 up and down total. So I'll be spending some time on the trail with at least like a, you know, moderately weighed down pack just so that I don't kill myself on the second or third day, but it's not like extreme. Like if you're going to say maybe like go to the top of Rainier or one of these other, it's just, you know, you don't ever go above 6,500 feet total. So it isn't like a mountaineering scenario. It's a trail the whole way. So there's no technical aspects to it. It's just, you know, I have no idea what I'll feel like on day 10 of not having a shower or plugging anything in or whatever. So it'll be a learning experience for me, but I'm looking forward to it.
So I think the moral of the story is if anyone is into hiking and camping, when they visit the Northwest, they should just call you up, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take them out. I love it. It's a great way to balance out the digital side and all the data.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell folks about yourself, what's going on? You have a whole new company and project going on. And so maybe for folks who don't know who you are, maybe dive back a little bit further. But, you know, I'm really curious about the data literacy and all the work that you're doing now.
Yeah, sure. So the quick version of it is I joined Tableau about 6 or 7 years ago. I came up here to the Seattle area from Los Angeles, where I was a data blogger and using data kind of in a Six Sigma kind of a context in a medical device company down there. And they kind of caught wind of my blog. Also, I was in the Iron Viz contest and I got to meet them. And so they brought me up to manage the Tableau public platform for the last 5 or 6 years, you know, which was such an awesome gig for me. That thing grew by 20-fold over the course of my time there and just got to see so many amazing visualizations, interactive data, saw the, you know, the wave of data journalism and then also mobile, and really got to be, I felt like in a position of seeing a lot of amazing people's talented work coming across that platform and just being part of a community that was growing and thriving. So it was really nice for me. You know, I transitioned into an evangelist role and was doing a lot of presenting for companies over the past year. Well, early on when I moved up here, I published Communicating Data with Tableau, which is the O'Reilly book. And right. then because of that, kind of got looped into some University of Washington, like continuing education courses on data visualization theory, and just sort of fell in love with the teaching side of things. And started to notice in my conversations with people as in the evangelist role that there was just this massive gap where so many people felt like they were being left behind of this data revolution where, you know, they didn't really feel like they could understand what was happening, like they could participate, the concepts, all the visuals. And there are so many people out there that didn't receive a formal education, you know, people in the 90s that went to school like me. This really wasn't covered. I mean, you know,
these right.
courses we were in, I was even in a technical course in engineering and came nowhere near, you know, learning the sorts of things I need to know to be able to work with data to the degree that our careers, our communities, even our personal life requires of us nowadays. So that's where I started to see, oh, this is actually a major need. And I think that Tableau does a great job, as many vendors do, you know, helping you learn about data through their tool. And that's really great. But I sort of felt like it would be a good opportunity for me to step into a scenario where I was able to teach people the concepts, like, you know, simple ones like how to read and interpret data visualizations, or how to dive in and clean dirty data or visualize it themselves or communicate it. So that's what I've been doing. So back in December, I left Tableau and started up Data Literacy LLC at dataliteracy.com. And I've been teaching my own classes and programs, working with some companies, working with some individuals. And yeah, just learning a lot about what it takes to help people become comfortable working with data. There's, I call them, you know, there's so many data phobic people out there. They really,
yeah.
you know, the worst thing you could do is send them a spreadsheet or something like that. They really wouldn't, you know, kind of feel confident enough to make good use out of it. So yeah, that's sort of what I've been doing these days. And it's been a real fun first, what is it, I guess 5 or 6 months now out yeah. of the gate. And yeah, learned a lot already, but having a good time with it.
That's great. So are you focused on both the data side of understanding how to get and use and clean and understand data and the statistics that one might need to do at least some basic descriptive analysis and statistics, and then also the visualization and then into the storytelling part of things?
Exactly. Yeah. So I had a lot of people when I first started this, they were saying, well, isn't data literacy, you know, just being able to read charts and graphs, like that's what literacy is, right? And yeah. so early on, I thought about that and, you know, really felt like it's more than that. Because if all I can do is try to make sense of a visual someone else has created, I think I'm sort of at the mercy of that person to some degree. You know, maybe there were errors in the underlying data that I can't see just by looking at the dashboard. Or, you know, maybe if I were to get my hands on the data myself and look into it, I might have some additional questions or my insight might develop further. So I very much became a believer that, you know, to me, someone who's highly data literate also knows how to work with data, find its issues and anomalies, uncover patterns, and then, yeah, actually be able to take it from there to a situation where they can convey those insights to other people effectively. So for me, it's kind of the, you know, and then that's what's sort of so beautiful about it, is because maybe there's someone who's been a specialist in data engineering or who really fancies himself, you know, an expert data storyteller. But oftentimes when I talk to those individuals, they don't feel like they know the full spectrum. They don't feel like they know what people upstream or downstream in this data working process, what they actually do, or, you know, what those concepts are. So I've, even for specialists and experts in one part of that process, I've found that they, you know, have this desire to learn, you know, what else is going on in the data world, so they can speak more effectively to people in their organizations that are involved in other pieces of that puzzle.
Mm-hmm. There was a Medium blog post a while back, and I'm now forgetting who wrote it, but it was on data literacy, and the writer, I'll look it up and put it up in the show notes for people, but the writer had made this point that when it comes to reading words, you are either literate or illiterate. There is no in between. And then the article went on to make the case the similar thing for data. So do you, I know I'm asking this question sort of out of the blue, but I'm wondering whether you feel that that's the same way, that when it comes to data, you're either literate or you're illiterate.
No, definitely not. I think there was a blog post maybe It was written by Michael Corell, who was actually a former coworker of mine at Tableau. And he really challenges this idea of literacy and using that essentially an analogy, right, to be able to. Yeah. And one of the things he did mention was that there was this kind of concern that he had that people would treat it as either you're either literate or illiterate, and that that was a very dangerous sort of a mindset. And I actually really agree with that, because you know the last thing you want to do is walk around and sort of say, oh, you know, here are the people in an organization who are literate and here are the ones who are not. And I don't think that that's a very helpful mindset. I think it's very much degrees, like a sliding scale of literacy, where you can become, you know, sort of more and more fluent in this language of data. So I don't believe it's a on-off switch at all. I think even people who I know who are very talented with data would tell you that they have so much to learn and feel a lack of proficiency in certain aspects of the overall scheme. So I do think it's a challenging, it's not a perfect analogy. I think you're taking literacy and applying it to data. So there's commonality, like I can understand my environment. I can see what other people are communicating to me and talk back to them in this language of data. And actually there's a huge promise because it could be a universal language, and in many ways it is. But yeah, I think that the analogy isn't perfect because, well, you brought up that one, which is that it isn't an on-off switch. I think that that's an important one. But also what's interesting is with vision, especially with data visualization, as you know, John, right? Like we're actually born with certain techniques and abilities to be able to notice things without having to go to school to learn it. So maybe with language and reading words and that would require us to dedicate time as children to learn it. Whereas with data visualization, you know, you show me a scatter plot with an outlier and it's colored red, and I could show that to just about anybody and they'd point to that exact dot and say, what's this?
But also it's the case that, you know, the reason I think that people, you know, a lot of people perhaps don't know how to read a scatter plot is because they never learn how to read a scatter plot. It's not like we know instinctively how to read a bar chart, right? Let's not like imprint it in our DNA. We have to learn how to read that. I totally agree with you that there are ranges of this literacy. And I'm not even sure that there's, even when it comes to text, there's these two, it's a binary thing, right? Like we don't start reading by opening a book and now we're able to read. We first have to identify the letter shapes, and then we start to identify the combinations of the letters, and then we can read some words. And then ultimately, you know, later on, we're able to read full passages and phrases and sentences and chapters. So, you know, it's to me saying that, and I'd have to go back to this blog post and sort of review, but I think you're right that there are these ranges, but I also think that also applies to reading text as well, that it's not on or off.
Yeah. And even then, like to your point, right, there's reading levels. So
are you at
fifth grade reading level or an eighth grade reading level? So
it's
something that you just continue to develop further as you go.
Right. Now, to this point of what it means to be data literate, you also have, this I think is probably one of the first publications of your new company, Data Literacy, is this ebook, 17 key traits of data literacy. And I've signed up for the newsletter, Ben, and I've downloaded it. So I've got it right here. So maybe you can talk a little bit about, I don't think we need to go through all 17, but you have these four groups, which I think is a really nice way to think about the basic problem or the basic challenge for people.
Yeah. So I started asking myself pretty much about a year and a half ago, I was preparing to leave Tableau. You know, what does it mean to be highly data literate? And so this is really just my take. Notice I call it 17 key traits, not the 17 key traits.
Right.
I think that there's probably a lot more than that. But the ones that I noticed that highly data literate people that I had the pleasure of working with all seem to, you know, display to some degree or another. And they fell into those four buckets of knowledge, skills, attitudes, and behaviors. And I like that framework, because I think sometimes when you ask someone, oh, you know, are you data literate? They usually would kind of interpret that to mean probably just knowledge or skills, I think. Like, do you know the concepts or are you able to use the tools? And I think that those are super important. But for especially in a group environment, to be highly data literate, you know, we also need to consider sort of what are our attitudes about data. And also, you know, kind of what do we do week in and week out in terms of the way we act? And those are things that I learned from, I've been lucky enough to have Georgia Lupi on my advisory board. And I think she's a person who's really brought out some key concepts around the humanity of data. And that's an attitude, right? That's a way of thinking about data that it doesn't really relate to, can you use this certain software package or code with this language? It's more around, how do you see the usefulness of this resource as it relates to human beings, what we're trying to accomplish? And so I found that those are really important components of the overall kind of data literacy picture to me. And this is a free little ebook that I really just had a fun putting together. Because again, I was trying to define in my own mind what did it even mean.
So when you're working with groups and with clients, are you working through this book with them? Or is this like the resource that they get at the end? Or when someone calls you up to you know, help them or their team or whatever, like how do you approach that sort of thing when it's a question of how do we become more data literate, either as an individual or in the organization as a whole?
Yeah, great question. So I got a chance. So for example, with that 17 key traits, I was invited to review that in a presentation to the intelligence community in Washington, D.C. In fact, I forgot to bug you. I was going to see about staying at your place, man. We'll talk about that another time. but yeah, that was just them saying like, hey, talk to us about this. We want to understand the concepts, right? So that would be, you know, an example of maybe a 1 or 2 hour session where we sit down and, you know, I kind of walk through those 17 traits one by one and expound on them a bit more than what you get in the book. But usually then it goes to the next step, which is, okay, well, hey, we want to become more data literate. And so many organizations are saying this now. And you can't just talk about traits. I think you need to actually get hands-on. So right now, that usually works its way into more extensive workshops or training having to do with being able to interpret data visualizations, being able to work with data by exploring it and communicating it. And so I'm just really going through the very first iteration of those kinds of workshops with organizations now. But it wouldn't be like, let's do a workshop on the 17 traits. Like that's not really... It's more just like a concept that I'd like to get out there.
Sure.
And then the next step is, okay, how do we find out which ones are most important and how do we develop ourselves in those areas where we're most deficient, in the areas where it's most important?
Right. I'm going to assume that when you work with these groups, you're hoping that you can bring the different sides together. I mean, I think a lot of us who are teaching either in universities or with clients are finding, I mean, I think I'm sure you found this, that they're sort of like either the design side over the design folk are over there and the management folk are over there and the data viz folk are over there and then the analysts are over here. Like, I guess the question is, what do you say when you come into an organization? They're like, help us be more literate. You know, the designers are down the hall if you want to go talk to them.
Yeah. So let me think about that. Well, usually the conversations I've had so far, they could be that it's just one department, right? So this is like the marketing group in a firm. So it might be, and in those instances, it would just be really training everyone in the department, whether they're data people or not. But it's definitely, I guess, there are other places where it's more broad, where it's, you know, not just one specific team or department, where they're looking more kind of cross-functionally. So my belief is that the programs would be ideally, you know, helpful for someone. It doesn't really matter what department they're in. So a big part of it for me is, and I actually learned this with the whole Six Sigma thing, which it was fun, you know, it's more of a corporate training program.
Yeah.
My dad used to give me a hard time that I had a black belt title because he thought he sent me through engineering school. And so that was a fun conversation with good old dad. But what it did do, which I loved, is it forced people to bring their own project and their own data to the workshops. And that's where I think you really start to have the learnings cemented in because you're actually applying it. So, you know, when I'm working with organizations, I'm asking them to bring data to the training so that when we talk about concepts, maybe at a higher level or more general across that would speak to, you know, people in multiple departments, they're applying it to their data, which has to do with their team and their department. And so you get the ideas, but then you also get the practical side of going through the steps in a way that helps you right then and there on the spot. So I think that in that sense, I'm hoping to be able to connect with people, you know, regardless of the department they're in, which is also a broad message. So it's a little bit challenging from a marketing point of view to say, no, this is for everybody in your organization. And it's maybe easier. And, you know, when I was preparing to launch, you know, I would hear messages from my business day schools, like you have to be really niche, you have to be really targeted. And I'm like, well, shoot, I'm actually really not any of those things. And hey, I'm just going to go for it because I think this is a language everybody needs to speak. So, it's early days for me, right? But that's a challenge for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what else do you have either out or coming out to make this work?
Yeah. So right now there's a course that I'm teaching, actually just wrapping it up. It's like a level one online course. And then I'm starting a level two at the beginning of June. Probably by the time this airs, it'll already be off and running. But so that's cool. That's really just for me. I love that because I get to work with individuals that maybe don't have like the backing of a big company with, you know, more resources. It's just someone out there who's saying, I just really need to learn how to work with data. So I love those interactions, little groups. And then there's a book, Avoiding Data Pitfalls, through Wiley, my ever patient and saintly patient, in fact, editing team at Wiley that coped with just a roller coaster for me over the last 4 years of finally getting that draft submitted. So I love that book because, you know, I kind of asked myself, what would I write to myself 10 or 15 years ago, 20 years ago, so that I would maybe make fewer mistakes with data than I've made over the years. So I'll turn that into a little program, you know, do some training on that too. And then I just launched a course through Udacity, which is one of these online sort of digitally native for-profit education companies. They're based out of Mountain View. I think some Googlers started it up. My class is all about data storytelling and, you know, being able to tell interesting data stories as well as animate them. So that program, I think, just launched. You can, you know, just sign up for that. I can give you a link for that. But I loved it because I got to learn a little bit about their processes, how they do things. This is a great outfit. They do an amazing job of creating this, you know, really cool educational environment with mentors and, you know, message boards where you can talk with each other. And so anyway, I think I went to school too, just by doing that project with them.
So you are now sort of free, as it were, of Tableau. So when you are teaching the Udacity course, are you teaching people how to use tools, and are you still focused on Tableau, or is it like a broader toolkit now that you can now play around with a little bit? Where maybe you didn't have that chance before.
Yeah, Tableau was always pretty good about letting me play with other tools. But yeah, a lot of my conversations with people had to do with that product, which I still love and use. And that Udacity program does allow people to. I walk them through Tableau Public's Story Points feature, as well as, which is where you kind of create an interactive slide presentation. And then also what's called the Pages Shelf, which you may or may not have heard of, which is Tableau's ability to animate the data. So yeah, I definitely still talk a lot about Tableau, teach Tableau, and love it. But I also was able to, yeah, definitely branch out a little bit. I was showing them this, I don't know if you've heard of it, but Duncan Clark and his team over there at Flourish.studio, they just launched a new feature called the Talkies feature, which is super cool.
Yeah,
because which you can do. Oh, I think maybe, do you have Duncan on? I think maybe, or you know, maybe Ali did.
I think he was on DataViz Today.
Ali Show. Right. I listened to that interview and he's great. And I think the tool he's building is super neat. But this Talkies feature, it allows you to make a data story, right? Including animated data that your readers or audience can interact with, hover over, you know, change the filters and all that. But what's super cool about it is you can actually upload an audio file. So you can actually have a soundtrack talking through this story that automatically plays out that also your readers can interact with. So it's, I guess I put it all together. It's a interactive, animated, narrated data story, and you don't even write code. And this is not even an advertisement for it. I was just so impressed with it.
Yeah.
That when I was talking to Udacity, I said, oh, I know how to make this advanced data storytelling course really cool. Let's teach them this Talkies feature. And they were really great. They embraced it. And I love that.
Right.
So we walk through that. But I think, for me, definitely, you know, stepping away from a vendor. Yeah, I find I've been playing a lot with R lately, and I'm looking forward to learning Python. And so, I feel like I'm broadening my horizons right now with tools.
For sure. That's cool.
For sure.
So I do want to get you mentioned Flourish, and I know they have the talkie feature, and they also have the bar chart race feature that they added after, you know, John Byrne Murdoch, who was just on the show, sort of popularized. Let me make this a broad question. So what's your take on animation in DataViz?
Okay, so I really love, if you've ever read Tamara Munzner's book, Visualization Analysis and Design, this is a book I teach in my UW classes, but she has a really great kind of rule of thumb about data visualization. And she says that eyes beat memory. And so what she means by that is, if you give someone the ability to see something at once in a bird's eye view, that's better than if you're requiring them to remember what happened sort of in a sequence. And so animation suffers from that, which is that you know, people see data move, but maybe they don't remember. It's hard to answer questions. It's hard to say, oh, you know, what happened halfway through the animation with one of the 50 data points, right? So those types of questions are hard to answer. That's on the con side, but the pro side, I don't think you can deny, is that animating data, Hans Rosling taught us this, right? It really brings it to life. It sets everything in motion. It's, you sort of connect with it in an almost an emotional way that I don't know if, so it's a very unique opportunity to connect with your audience in a way that just really leaves them with an amazing sense of the fluidity of the environment and, you know, feeling and sensing how things changed over time, not just seeing it. So I kind of find like they both have their own purpose. But so in general, I wouldn't be a person to say, you know, never use animation. And I agree with Munsner that, you know, from an analytical point of view, if you're going to animate the data, you also want to give them the ability to go in and answer specific questions. But I was just so moved by Rosling and by others. And, you know, Nathan Yao has done some amazing data animations with, like, you know, the day in the life type surveys. And it's just, you just feel what's happening in a totally different way. So I love it.
No, I agree. I think there's that playfulness to some of these. And I also think what's interesting about them is some of them, or a lot of them, at least the last, you know, with this bar chart race thing, they seem to be made especially or specifically for social media. Which is, again, a different way to interact with content than if it were on a website or if it were, you know, in a different type of platform.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so funny to see the rise of the GIF again over the last few years. Right? So much of our consumption has moved to the mobile platform. I got to watch that, you know, with the Tableau Public platform and just seeing how all the journalists I was working with were really, you know, it went from kind of sort of asking, oh, how does this work on mobile? Maybe as a question not that didn't really matter to, like, that's really all, in some cases, all they thought about. So I get that. I get that. Oh, one other thing too, as it relates to data literacy specifically, I think, and you mentioned scatter plots and how a lot of people don't know maybe how to read them. I think actually animation can really play a role here, because imagine if, let's say you've got, you know, a bunch of dots on a scatter plot, right? Instead of just throwing that at someone and saying, here you go, what if you animated the dots across the x-axis and told them what was happening? Like, here we'll see every country move to its GDP position. Now we'll see it. Now we'll see it. No, and stop, right? And then the next sequence of the animation shows those circles rising to, you know, maybe their population place on the y-axis. I think that you have a way of introducing someone to a graph and or a chart and really helping them kind of like connect with the axes in a way that is, I think, has a lot of power and potential, because I don't think, I don't think we can assume everybody immediately knows what it's showing, but there's a way to animate it into the view such that they sort of see the build and maybe even get to a place where they see something more complex than they otherwise would have been able to read.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that's exactly right. Cool, Ben. Well, you've got a lot going on, man.
Yeah, thanks. It's been fun. It's been fun. Thanks for having me. Great. Show. I love this show. I always listen to it.
Thanks.
I'm coming I'm coming your way this summer. So
anytime you let me know, I got a spot for you. We've got a spare bedroom. You can hang out downstairs, and my daughter will make you pancakes in the morning.
I love it.
And great. Well, let me know when you come out east, and have a great summer and good luck with everything. It was great chatting with you, bud.
Likewise. Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. And thanks for everyone for tuning in to this whole season. I really do appreciate the support, and I do appreciate all the guests who've come on and talked with me about their projects, about their books, about their websites, about all the great content they're producing and work that they're doing. If you'd like to support the show, please review it on your favorite podcast provider or tell your friends about it. If you'd like to support me financially, that'd be great. I could always use some help paying for transcription services, paying for editing services, paying for the website, all the stuff that's needed to bring you this show every other week. So in the fall, I have a whole new slate of guests all set up to bring to you. But if there are people that you'd like to hear from, you'd like to hear me chat with them, please drop me a note. Let me know who is out there that you would like to talk, that you'd like to hear from. I'm sure there's lots of people that I don't know about, people whose work is making a difference, that is helping you understand things about your world and your experience. And I would love to chat with them. I'd love to hear about the work that they're doing, the tools that they're using, and how they think about communicating their data, their results, and their analysis. So until the fall, and until next time, this has been the Policy Viz Podcast. Thanks so much for listening.